providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised in these final two segments, we are switching our focus a little bit more to the energy sector, more specifically the oil and natural gas markets, as we are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Now, Dan, let's simply start off with the oil price. Look, oil's been quite volatile, and unfortunately, over the last, closing in on a month now, the crude oil price has been dropping. It got over $90 a barrel at the tail end of September, even touched right around $90 a barrel in mid-October, but it's been almost a straight line down. As we're recording this on Thursday, oil is trading right about at that $76 level. So it is still generally a good price for producers, but there's no denying that there is a bit of a downtrend here and some early on support levels have been broken. What's happening here, Dan? Why do you think we're seeing this pullback in crude oil?
Well, I think number one is the war premium. It appears that they're going to be able to contain this war between Israel and Hamas, contain it in those two areas there. And as long as Hezbollah doesn't decide to jump in full bore, I don't think the U.S. is going to do anything directly against Iran. I mean, there was a bunch of speculation that, you know, obviously Iran is supporting Hamas and Hezbollah. And if you want to really get to the root of this problem in the Middle East, you really have to get serious about Iran. And to get serious, you would have to, you know, start enforcing the sanctions that were in place when Biden took office. But he just, after about 6 months, they just dropped enforcement of that. That cash flow, which has generated a $60 or $70 billion of additional revenue, oil revenues for Iran, is what they use to fund these terrorists. So if that doesn't happen, yeah, we're probably down here. But I would urge all your listeners, go out, run a one-year chart of West Texas Intermediate crude oil prices, and you're going to see the most volatile year I've ever seen. And we've been flopping around in the low 90s to the high 70s. And then it looks like today, we're a little bit 76. So it looks like there's some kind of a support level there. I do think the paper traders, you know, the trading of NYMEX futures contracts is the sport of the day, I guess, for speculators. And a lot of them do it on margin. So any big sell in the morning can cause a drop off. Any big buyer in the can cause the shorts to start sell a covering or something. But it looks like to me, if we find support around 75, a month from now, we could be back at 90. I mean, the chart just is a wide range of prices, that's for sure.
Yeah, Dan, it has really been a whipsaw between, like you say, the low 90s and then the mid 70s. And it's been all over the mulberry bush in between there and back and forth. But strike a balance for us in the supply and demand picture, too, just because there's the EIA that's put out some reports showing that inventories were building. Some people think that demand is slow during this part of the year, but it may pick up during the winter. Maybe just strike a balance on how you see those two forces, supply and demand, pulling at each other.
Well, you know, tropical storm activity in the Gulf of Mexico does impact those storage reports because those big tankers are not going to go into a region that's got a hurricane in place. So now that we're past the hurricane season, a lot of times you do see a build in U.S. inventories as those tankers can now get into the Gulf Coast and down by Galveston. There's right now, there's probably 50 tankers just waiting in line to unload or something. But so that's, and then we're also reloading those tankers to export our light oil back to the European market because they have refineries that can handle that light oil that we have too much of. You know, it's going to go up and down now. But, and then you do have this time of year, you have a bunch of refineries that are offline because they're doing annual maintenance. They have to do something called turnaround where they pressure test all their valves and everything. It's a required, you know, thing so they don't blow up, I guess. Then they have to come back online to start producing more home heating oil here in November. So that should pick up. And, you know, the refiners are the consumers of crude oil. We don't burn crude oil in our cars, but all of our other inventories, especially diesel and home heating oil, are quite low. They're, you know, 12-15% below normal at this time of the year. So it's not like we have a surplus of refined products sitting around.
So on the demand side, what about the U.S. refilling its strategic petroleum reserve? They said they were going to do it in around these levels. Do you see the U.S. doing that? That could potentially help set a floor to the price?
Yeah, I mean, that would be nice if they would set a floor and say, like, okay, 75, we're going to start buying. And then everybody would know that was a floor. And I think that probably has something to do with why it does bounce off about 75. But I don't really see it happening. There was something that went out that they're, you know, taking bids to buy 3 million barrels, but not total, not 3 million barrels a day, but 3 million barrels total for the month. And that would be nothing really, not much impact on demand. But we also don't have the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to drain if we do get into some kind of shortage. And other than that, I mean, IEA, the International Energy Agency based in Paris, they've been reporting month after month after month that demand for oil-based products exceeds supply, and above-ground inventories of refined products have been draining like crazy. So there's really a shortage right now. And OPEC the other day said Saudi Arabia is going to stick with their low exports, at least through the end of the year. And at the next meeting, at next OPEC meeting, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't say they're going to extend those through the first quarter. They are going to defend. I mean, right now I'm looking at the screen and Brent is $80.41. I think they will definitely defend $80 Brent. They'll do whatever it takes to keep Brent that price. They have to have those revenues.
Well, real quick, before we get into some of the energy companies, let's also touch on Nat Gas. Nat Gas had a little bit of a jump, and it was up in the mid-threes, up to about 355. Now it's pulled back to around three. Do you think that as the winter gets closer, that Nat Gas may still have a little more momentum, or was that it?
No. We had a week of cold weather down here in Texas. We got down into the low 40s for like five or six nights in a row. And that got everybody all excited. Yeah, everybody in Texas, and if you go the whole Southeast region, everybody heats their homes with natural gas. So whenever those big cold waves go down deep into the South, that's when you get the big draws. We are going to start the winter with about 150 to 200 BCF more in storage. That sounds like a big number, but storage is nowhere close to being filled. I think we're going to start the winter heating season really starts mid-November. At that point, we'll have about 3,800 BCF, but total storage capacity is like 4,200. So we're not close to refilling storage. And if we have a normal winter, something close to a normal winter, and we have the LNG export facilities stay at maximum capacity, which they have been. And I looked this morning, the gas prices for delivered LNG in Europe are like $14 and $17 in Asia or vice versa, but they're in the mid-teens. So the profit margin on getting that gas in ships in over to Asia or into Europe is extremely profitable. And so those facilities are going to be maxed out as long as they're okay. You know, last year we had that Freeport facility go offline, and if it had not gone offline, it was a two BCF a day facility. And it was offline for over 200 days. So there's 400 BCF that would have been taken out of the U.S. market.
All right, Dan, let's get a little bit more into the stocks here. You sent over three stocks that we're going to talk about. But I first just want a broad comment on the action in the stocks. When we saw oil move up to over $90 a barrel, people were complaining that the stocks weren't really following that price up. So then when oil's correcting, some of the stocks are correcting. Can we just broadly, or can you broadly just provide your thoughts on how the stocks are reacting relating to the energy prices?
Yeah, you know, they look at those wild swings in the oil price, and that makes them very cautious for the sector. But I will say, let's say oil goes to 70 or averages 75 for here on out for a while. These companies are extremely profitable. We had a meeting with Baytex yesterday, spent about an hour with the CEO, and, you know, somebody asked, well, what's your break even? And he says, well, you know, our budget is based on $60 WTI. We're profitable and can support our capital program, which is $60 oil. So they're just printing money now at 75, 80. Anyway, so the companies are very profitable. They don't need $80 or $90 to be profitable. And I do not see any kind of potential for a pullback to that. You'd have to have a serious global recession for that to happen.
Well, Dan, let's get into a couple of the specific companies. There's a few that you sent us today you wanted to talk about, and one of them is one that I've been following closely too. That's Baytex Energy, ticker BTE. One of the things that caught my attention, and you brought it up on our show, I don't know, a couple shows ago, was that they had this merger with Ranger Oil, and it's underappreciated by the market. And now that the quarterly reports are starting to come in, I think it's starting to raise some eyebrows. So give us an update on Baytex.
Yeah, their CEO was in Houston yesterday, and actually he brought the whole team. He brought about five or six people from the management of Ranger Oil, which has a big office here in Houston. They're a pretty big deal, and I didn't really realize this is what they have down in South Texas in the Eagleford and the Austin Chalk. They're in a big deal that's operated by Marathon. I think they own a 30% interest in a big drilling program down there. And it represents about half of Baytex's revenues. I didn't really realize it was that big of a chunk of their revenues. And those are extremely profitable. But they closed Ranger Oil was one of our Sweet 16 companies. I actually been following that company, which was previously called Penn Virginia. They merged with another company I'd followed forever, which was Lone Star Resources, a pure play Eagleford company. So those two companies merged, and they decided to change the name to Ranger Oil. And then, you know, Baytex made this deal with them back at the first of the year, and they closed it. They closed the merger on June the 20th. And so far, all the wells that they've drilled since then have come on very, very strong. And I think this is what can happen when you have two technical teams join forces, and then the best ideas come out for how to complete wells and stuff like that. So we had this hour-long meeting with them yesterday. We had 40 people. We have regular monthly luncheons with our group down here hosted by these public companies. And everybody was very interested. We had 40 people at it. He made a good detailed presentation. And what struck me was he said the third quarter production was 150,601 BOE per day, a big jump since the merger of about 50,000-60,000 barrels a day. And they're going to jump to 159 BOE per day, a pretty significant jump from third quarter to fourth quarter. And this stock is trading at a very low multiple of operating cash flow. It's trading for like 2x cash flow, and they're generating a lot of free cash flow. In fact, I think they're going to generate close to $1 billion in cash flow next year if oil averages 75. So they are going to use this free cash flow to pay down debt, but aggressively buy back their stock. They announced a stock buyback program that would reduce their share count by 9%. So they're paying down debt and they're reducing the share count. Well, that's a recipe for a much higher stock price. And my current valuation is $9.25 Canadian, and it was trading at 5:30 this morning. So, you know, there's about a 70 or 75, 80% upside in that stock just to get the current value. And I also think Baytex could be a takeover target for a larger company. Somebody asked that question at the luncheon, and he acted like, you know, they'd be open to an offer. So we'll see.
Hey, very interesting. Your valuation, that's way higher than where Baytex is trading right now. So maybe something for our listeners to look into. Let's also talk about Permian Resources, traded PR. They also closed a merger with Earthstone Energy at the very beginning of this month. Take us through what you like about this company and why you also think it's undervalued, please.
Okay, first of all, I was following Earthstone Energy from the day they've been formed. That team that ran that company, they 10 years ago had a company called Geo Resources that sold for about triple what the people had invested in it. So those same investors rolled their money into Earthstone and set these guys up. But over a very short period of time, they increased their production to over 100,000 barrels. And I think third quarter production was 115,000 barrels a day, BOE per day. And so when you combine that with what Permian Resources has, you have a company producing 300,000 BOE per day, about 52% of that crude oil, 20% NGLs, probably about 85, 90% of their revenues come from liquid sales. They have a tremendous acreage position in the Delaware Basin. That the Delaware Basin is the westernmost sub-basin of the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin itself covers 19 million acres. It's, you know, about a third the size of the whole state of Texas, and goes over into New Mexico. And the wells they've been drilling in southeastern New Mexico have just been tremendous wells. I mean, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 barrel a day wells that pay out in a matter of months. And they've got a lot more drilling locations. And then Earthstone also had a big inventory of development drilling locations. So I really like this deal. you know, when you have a merger of this size, and this is a pretty big company with about an $8 billion market cap. So I ran the numbers and I said, I looked, what did Exxon pay for Pioneer? They paid $60 billion US for that company. If you compare that in size to the amount of production and the amount of acreage that is in Permian Basin, Permian Resources is about one third the size. So take one third. That would mean a $20 billion price tag for Permian Resources. Its current market cap is $8 billion. So, you know, do the math. This thing really has some significant upside. I updated. So I've been following both of these companies. We're in our Sweet 16, and I had detailed models for both of them. So it was really easy for me to merge these two models together and come up with what they were going to look like post-merger. And then I got some additional information from both of them when they announced third quarter results in their conference calls. So I've tweaked the model, and I've come up with, I believe, their production next year. Today, their production, combined production, about 300,000 BOE per day. It will go up maybe another 10,000 BOE a day because Permian Resources is an aggressive driller. I think they're running 8 rigs right now, completing a lot of wells. So their production is going to ramp up a little bit to the end of the year. But then I'm assuming that it'll get to 325 BOE per day next year. And that will mean they're going to generate about $3.8 billion of operating cash flow next year. And a lot of that is going to be free cash flow. They do pay a small dividend now. I expect them to have a stockholder, you know, program where they pay dividends, variable dividends, and stock buybacks. But it, you know, it's going to take a while for this merger, the integration of the merger and the people and everything to settle down. So probably within about 6 months, they'll have a much better handle on what they're going to do with that free cash flow. But the balance sheet's in good shape. I mean, it was a stock for stock merger, so they didn't take on a lot of debt for that deal. Everything looks good. The financials look very good, and it is going to draw a lot of attention from the Wall Street analysts. In fact, I listened to the conference call, and there was at least a dozen very high quality energy sector analysts on that conference call. So you're going to see a lot of new updates and price target increases on that one.
Well, Dan, maybe just a quick comment on the state of M&A in the energy space, because to your point, yeah, Exxon just took over Pioneer. That was a big deal to move into the Permian. You've got here Permian Resources with Thurstone. We just talked about Baytex taking over Ranger Oil. There's Chevron that took over Hess. Are we in a wave of M&A for the sector? Do you expect it to continue? Are other companies that are larger looking at grabbing positions in basins now before other big boys grab them up? What's your take on the M&A factor in the energy space?
Yeah, this was actually a topic we had with Baytex yesterday. See, what happens when the interest rates go up like they have been, then the cost of capital for these smaller companies increases. You know, they have variable interest rates on a lot of their debt, so their interest expense goes up. Well, you get an Exxon, let's say, the ones that go out and, you know, buy, and of course, Pioneer could get all the money they wanted to. But for some of these smaller companies, even like a Baytex, you know, those big companies, they can get all the money they want. The banks are begging them to borrow more money at very good prices. They can tap into that. And a lot of them are generating just massive amounts of free cash flow already, so they can go buy these properties. So if you can go out in the market and make a merger or a big acquisition, and you can acquire more proven reserves than you could generate by drilling, you're going to do it. I mean, and that cycle happens every once in a while. So you see everything coming together, and there's a lot of good takeover targets. I mean, the companies I follow, several high quality companies are trading for just 3 or 4 times operating cash flow. So they're screaming takeover targets, if you ask me. I used to do this for a living when I was at Hess for about 3 years. I ran the financial group that was evaluating M&A targets. And we actually closed on about $3.5 billion worth of deals, which, you know, in today's dollars would be about $10 billion, I guess. But anyway, our watch list was any company we could acquire for 6 times cash flow. So there's a boatload of good deals out there right now.
Yeah, any sort of M&A is good for a sector, especially some big deals. It does free up capital for investors to move into some other stocks. Let's talk about the final stock that you sent over to us, Ovintiv, traded OVV. This is an upstream company. Dan, take us through what you like about Ovintiv.
Okay, for your Canadian listeners, this company was named Encana. And so based in Calgary, they moved their office to Denver and renamed it Ovintiv. And since then, they've been more focused on buying up assets and focus most of their drilling effort on U.S. properties. But anyway, so it was trading at 45.55 this morning when I put together my notes for this. They reported outstanding third quarter results that beat my forecast. The company, it's a large cap that does not get the coverage it deserves. I'm surprised for a company with this much production, they don't get more coverage. But third quarter production was 571,000 BOE per day, about 37.5% oil. When you add up their oil and condensate sales, though, because of the disparity with gas prices, their liquid sales account for about 82% of their total revenue. So it's heavily weighted to liquids. It has, but what got my attention on this one is they announced a sale of their mature assets in the Bakken in North Dakota. And they used that proceeds to pay down some debt. And then right after that, they announced a Permian Basin acquisition that had 75,000 BOA of production, but also added a lot of high quality development drilling inventory. The only negative I had on this company was that I didn't think they had that great of an inventory base. You know, they only had maybe 3 or 4 years were remaining of quality drilling inventory. And now this deal adds a lot more. I call it running room. You know, these companies have to keep drilling wells to, you know, keep their production up. So they need a lot of good quality drilling inventory. And that second deal, that Midland Basin deal, really, really helped them. Now, the Midland Basin is the eastern sub-basin of the Permian. But anyway, so it's trading at like 45, 46 today. My current valuation is $67 a share, and that is based on just 4.25 times operating cash flow. A company of this size, of this strength, generating a lot of free cash flow, should definitely be trading for at least 4 times operating cash flow. 2023, because of these two strategic deals they did, was a significant transition year. I call it a transition year for the company. They're on track to generate over $1 billion of free cash flow this year. Actually, the Midland Basin acquisition with the sales proceeds from Bakken and their current cash flow within a few more months will actually pay out. So they're in really good shape. Next year, I think next year will be a year when this stock gets a lot more attention, I believe, because they're going to be generating, based on my forecast, over $10 in net income per share, over $18 of operating cash flow per share. So just multiply that number by 4 times, and that's what I think would be a reasonable 1-year price target. The actually TipRanks, which has a lot of current forecast in their database, their forecast for next year is $8.14 net income per share and $16.37. So slightly below their, you know, those analysts are probably using a lower oil price forecast than I am. But anyway, I think that's it. But 2024 free cash flow should be close to $1.5 billion, and it's going to be used primarily to lower their debt and buy back stock. They just submitted another one of those, whatever they call them up in Canada, But they can buy back about 9% of their outstanding stock. That would significantly increase the per share results for this company. And I do expect they pay a small dividend. I expect them to increase dividends the second half of next year. And I expect production to be in the range of 580,000 to 590,000 BOE per day. And drilling, their CapEx should be about $2.5 billion. So pretty big company, pretty big drilling program and stuff. But another thing I like about it, quarter after quarter, they, I think, intentionally underpromise and overdeliver on their guidance, their production guidance. The Wall Street gang loves that, by the way. But anyway, TipRanks current price target is $57. There's 4 of the analysts that coverage I looked this morning on TipRanks, and 4 of them have updated their price targets on the company. The lowest, they were 53, 58, 65, and 66. Actually, the 66 price target was by one of my favorite analysts. He's a 5-star analyst ranked by TipRanks, which is their top rating. And all 4 of them rated as a buy at the current price. So I think it's a good one for you guys, your listeners, to look at.
All right, Dan. Always great chatting with you. Thank you for bringing some of these companies to our attention again for some of them. But you know what? You have outlined where your price targets are and also some pretty simple metrics for us to see just how the market is valuing them. Maybe a disconnect there between their cash flow and where their share price is. So, Dan, thank you again for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in, taking time out of your weekend to join us. For everyone in Canada, we all hope you have a very good Remembrance Day and Veterans Day in the U.S. Be sure to check out our website, kereport.com, and our podcast, The KE Report, to stay up to date on all the daily editorials and company interviews we recorded throughout the week. Everyone, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.